The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 52. Killing the Divine Animal. Section 5. Killing the Sacred Bear. Part 3. Another description of the bear festivals of the Gilyaks has been given us by Mr. Leo Sternberg. It agrees substantially with the foregoing accounts, but a few particulars in it may be noted. According to Mr. Sternberg, the festival is usually held in honor of a deceased relation. The next of kin either buys or catches a bear cub and nurtures it for 2 or 3 years till it is ready for the sacrifice. Only certain distinguished guests, Nachen, are privileged to partake of the bear's flesh, but the host and members of his clan eat a broth made from the flesh. Great quantities of this broth are prepared and consumed on the occasion. The guests of honor, Nachen, must belong to the clan to which the host's daughters and the other women of his clan are married. One of these guests, usually the host's son-in-law, is entrusted with the duty of shooting the bear dead with an arrow. The skin, head, and flesh of the slain bear are brought into the house not through the door but through the smoke hole. A quiver full of arrows is laid under the head and beside it are deposited tobacco, sugar, and other food. The soul of the bear is supposed to carry off the souls of these things with it on the far journey. A special vessel is used for cooking the bear's flesh, and the fire must be kindled by a sacred apparatus of flint and steel, which belongs to the clan and is handed down from generation to generation, but which is never used to light fires except on these solemn occasions. Of all the many viands cooked for the consumption of the assembled people, a portion is placed in a special vessel and set before the bear's head. This is called feeding the head. After the bear has been killed, dogs are sacrificed in couples of male and female. Before being throttled, they are fed and invited to go to their lord on the highest mountain, to change their skins, and to return next year in the form of bears. The soul of the dead bear departs to the same lord, who is also lord of the primeval forest. It goes away laden with the offerings that have been made to it, and attended by the souls of the dogs and also by the souls of the sacred whittled sticks, which figure prominently at the festival. The Goldi, neighbors of the Gilyaks, treat the bear in much the same way. They hunt and kill it. But sometimes they capture a live bear and keep him in a cage, feeding him well and calling him their son and brother. Then at a great festival he is taken from his cage, paraded about with marked consideration, and afterwards killed and eaten. The skull, jawbones, and ears are then suspended on a tree, as an antidote against evil spirits. But the flesh is eaten and much relished, for they believe that all who partake of it acquire a zest for the chase, and become courageous. The Orchis, another Tungusian people of the region of the Amur, hold bear festivals of the same general character. Anyone who catches a bear cub considers it his bounden duty to rear it in a cage for about 3 years, in order at the end of that time to kill it publicly and eat the flesh with his friends. The feasts being public, though organized by individuals, the people try to have one in each Orchi village every year in turn. When the bear is taken out of his cage, he is led about by means of ropes to all the huts, accompanied by people armed with lances, bows, and arrows. At each hut the bear and bear leaders are treated to something good to eat and drink. This goes on for several days until all the huts, not only in that village but also in the next, have been visited. The days are given up to sport and noisy jollity. Then the bear is tied to a tree or wooden pillar and shot to death by the arrows of the crowd, after which its flesh is roasted and eaten. Among the Orchis of the Tumja River, women take part in the bear feasts, while among the Orchis of the River Vi the women will not even touch bear's flesh. In the treatment of the captive bear by these tribes there are features which can hardly be distinguished from worship. Such, for example, are the prayers offered to it both alive and dead. The offerings of food, including portions of its own flesh, laid before the animal's skull. and the Gilyak custom of leading the living beast to the river in order to ensure a supply of fish, and of conducting him from house to house in order that every family may receive his blessing, just as in Europe a May tree or a person or representative of the tree spirit used to be taken from door to door in spring for the sake of diffusing among all and sundry the fresh energies of reviving nature. Again, the solemn participation in his flesh and blood, and particularly the Aino custom of sharing the contents of the cup which had been consecrated by being set before the dead beast, are strongly suggestive of a sacrament, and the suggestion is confirmed by the Gilyak practice of reserving special vessels to hold the flesh and cooking it on a fire kindled by a sacred apparatus which is never employed except on these religious occasions. Indeed, our principal authority on Aino religion, the Reverend John Batchelor, frankly describes as worship the ceremonious respect which the Aino pay to the bear, and he affirms that the animal is undoubtedly one of their gods. Certainly the Aino appear to apply their name for god, Camu, freely to the bear. But, as Mr. Batchelor himself points out, that word is used with many different shades of meaning and is applied to a great variety of objects, so that from its application to the bear we cannot safely argue that the animal is actually regarded as a deity. Indeed, we are expressly told that the Aino of Saghalien do not consider the bear to be a god but only a messenger to the gods, and the message with which they charge the animal at its death bears out the statement. Apparently the Gilyaks also look on the bear in the light of an envoy dispatched with presents to the Lord of the Mountain, on whom the welfare of the people depends. At the same time they treat the animal as a being of a higher order than man, in fact as a minor deity, whose presence in the village, so long as he is kept and fed, diffuses blessings, especially by keeping at bay the swarms of evil spirits who are constantly lying in wait for people, stealing their goods and destroying their bodies by sickness and disease. Moreover, by partaking of the flesh, blood, or broth of the bear, the Gilyaks, the Aino, and the Goldie are all of opinion that they acquire some portion of the animal's mighty powers, particularly his courage and strength. No wonder, therefore, that they should treat so great a benefactor with marks of the highest respect and affection. Some light may be thrown on the ambiguous attitude of the Aino to bears by comparing the similar treatment which they accord to other creatures. For example, they regard the eagle owl as a good deity who by his hooting warns men of threatened evil and defends them against it. Hence he is loved, trusted, and devoutly worshipped as a divine mediator between men and the Creator. The various names applied to him are significant both of his divinity and of his mediatorship. Whenever an opportunity offers, one of these divine birds is captured and kept in a cage, where he is greeted with the endearing titles of Beloved God, and Dear Little Divinity. Nevertheless, the time comes when the Dear Little Divinity is throttled and sent away in his capacity of mediator to take a message to the superior gods or to the Creator himself. The following is the form of prayer addressed to the eagle owl when it is about to be sacrificed. Beloved deity, we have brought you up because we loved you, and now we are about to send you to your father. We herewith offer you food, inao, wine, and cakes. Take them to your parent, and he will be very pleased. When you come to him say, I have lived a long time among the Aina, where an Aina father and an Aina mother reared me. I now come to thee. I have brought a variety of good things. I saw while living in Aina land a great deal of distress. I observed that some of the people were possessed by demons, some were wounded by wild animals, some were hurt by landslides, others suffered shipwreck, and many were attacked by disease. The people are in great straits. My father, hear me, and hasten to look upon the Aina and help them. Single quote, if you do this, your father will help us. Again, the Aino keep eagles in cages, worship them as divinities, and ask them to defend the people from evil. Yet they offer the bird in sacrifice, and when they are about to do so they pray to him, saying, O precious divinity, O thou divine bird, pray listen to my words. Thou dost not belong to this world, for thy home is with the Creator and his golden eagles. This being so, I present thee with these Inaoan cakes and other precious things. Do thou ride upon the Inaoan descend to thy home in the glorious heavens. When thou arrivest, assemble the deities of thy own kind together and thank them for us for having governed the world. Do thou come again, I beseech thee, and rule over us. O my precious one, go thou quietly. Once more, the Aino revere hawks, keep them in cages, and offer them in sacrifice. At the time of killing one of them the following prayer should be addressed to the bird, O divine hawk, thou art an expert hunter, please cause thy cleverness to descend on me. If a hawk is well treated in captivity and prayed to after this fashion when he is about to be killed, he will surely send help to the hunter. Thus the Aino hopes to profit in various ways by slaughtering the creatures, which, nevertheless, he treats as divine. He expects them to carry messages for him to their kindred or to the gods in the upper world. He hopes to partake of their virtues by swallowing parts of their bodies or in other ways. And apparently he looks forward to their bodily resurrection in this world, which will enable him again to catch and kill them, and again to reap all the benefits which he has already derived from their slaughter. For in the prayers addressed to the worshipful bear and the worshipful eagle before they are knocked on the head the creatures are invited to come again, which seems clearly to point to a faith in their future resurrection. If any doubt could exist on this head, it would be dispelled by the evidence of Mr. Batchelor, who tells us that the Aino are firmly convinced that the spirits of birds and animals killed in hunting or offered in sacrifice come and live again upon the earth clothed with a body. And they believe, further, that they appear here for the special benefit of men, particularly Aino hunters. The Aino, Mr. Batchelor tells us, confess at least slays and eats the beast that another may come in its place and be treated in like manner. And at the time of sacrificing the creatures, prayers are said to them which form a request that they will come again and furnish viands for another feast, as if it were an honor to them to be thus killed and eaten, and a pleasure as well. Indeed, such is the people's idea. These last observations, as the context shows, refer especially to the sacrifice of bears. Thus among the benefits which the Aino anticipates from the slaughter of the worshipful animals not the least substantial is that of gorging himself on their flesh and blood, both on the present and on many a similar occasion hereafter. And that pleasing prospect again is derived from his firm faith in the spiritual immortality and bodily resurrection of the dead animals. A like faith is shared by many savage hunters in many parts of the world and has given rise to a variety of quaint customs, some of which will be described presently. Meantime, it is not unimportant to observe that the solemn festivals at which the Aino, the Gilliacs, and other tribes slaughter the tame caged bears with demonstrations of respect and sorrow, are probably nothing but an extension or glorification of similar rites which the hunter performs over any wild bear which he chances to kill in the forest. Indeed, with regard to the Gilliacs, we are expressly informed that this is the case. If we would understand the meaning of the Gilliac ritual, says Mr. Sternberg, we must above all remember that the bear festivals are not, as is usually but falsely assumed, celebrated only at the killing of a house bear but are held on every occasion when a Gilliac succeeds in slaughtering a bear in the chase. It is true that in such cases the festival assumes less imposing dimensions, but in its essence it remains the same. When the head and skin of a bear killed in the forest are brought into the village, they are accorded a triumphal reception with music and solemn ceremonial. The head is laid on a consecrated scaffold, fed, and treated with offerings, just as at the killing of a house bear. And the guests of honor, Na Chen, are also assembled. So, too, dogs are sacrificed, and the bones of the bear are preserved in the same place and with the same marks of respect as the bones of a house bear. Hence the great winter festival is only an extension of the rite which is observed at the slaughter of every bear. Thus the apparent contradiction in the practice of these tribes, who venerate and almost deify the animals which they habitually hunt, kill, and eat, is not so flagrant as at first sight it appears to us. The people have reasons, and some very practical reasons, for acting as they do. For the savage is by no means so logical and unpractical as to superficial observers he is apt to seem. He has thought deeply on the questions which immediately concern him, he reasons about them, and though his conclusions often diverge very widely from ours, we ought not to deny him the credit of patient and prolonged meditation on some fundamental problems of human existence. In the present case, if he treats bears in general as creatures wholly subservient to human needs and yet singles out certain individuals of the species for homage which almost amounts to deification, we must not hastily set him down as irrational and inconsistent, but must endeavor to place ourselves at his point of view, to see things as he sees them, and to divest ourselves of the prepossessions which tinge so deeply our own views of the world. If we do so, we shall probably discover that, however absurd his conduct may appear to us, the savage nevertheless generally acts on a train of reasoning which seems to him in harmony with the facts of his limited experience. This I propose to illustrate in the following chapter, where I shall attempt to show that the solemn ceremonial of the bear festival among the Ainus and other tribes of northeastern Asia is only a particularly striking example of the respect which, on the principles of his rude philosophy, the savage habitually pays to the animals which he kills and eats.